Cedric Sabalas joins us on Sports Byline USA. Of course, you know the name. He played 11 seasons in the NBA, drafted by Phoenix, played with the Lakers, and then also had time with Dallas, Detroit, and Miami. And he was the 1992 NBA Slam Dunk Champion, and he won that Slam Dunk Championship with a blindfolded dunk. You went to school in California. You went to Cal State Fullerton, and I'm just wondering, when you were there, did you have a chance to go to any of the Laker games when you were down in that part of the country?
No, not at all. I didn't attend any games when I was a kid. Financial reasons and all, yeah, basically, yeah, financial reasons. And also, they were free on television back then, so I got to catch them all on TV.
Well, the reason why I asked that is that I wondered that once you had a chance to put on a Laker uniform, whether that was somewhat of a out-of-body experience after that, having been such a high-profile franchise and everything. What was it like when you put on the Lakers uniform and stepped on the floor for the first time with them?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I grew up a Laker fan, still a Laker fan, and I just, wearing the bright yellow, as we call it, the Laker gold, it's just unbelievable. And I could not imagine how big it is until you play actually for the Lakers. My first experience of being on the road was just unbelievable. We in towns that love Utah, we in towns that love the Suns, we in towns that love Golden State and Boston and everybody else, and they're cheering for the Lakers, and it's just overwhelming. Because when I was with Phoenix earlier, it was about the home team, and they were taking Philadelphia and everybody else. They cheer for the home team. There's a couple of fans in there, but you dominating a stadium that's not your home stadium is just an unbelievable feeling.
You bring up a very good point. I think there's only a couple of iconic franchises in all of sports. I think about the Yankees in baseball, certainly the Boston Celtics and the Lakers in basketball, and maybe even the Boston Red Sox in baseball. What is it that makes those franchises something special, as you said, even outside of the market they play in?
Well, don't forget about my favorite team, Dallas Cowboys, in football. But I think what makes them great is just the fact that they put out a lot of championships. They put out great superstars. The city, most of the cities are very hard-working cities or very popular, star-studded cities, so to speak, with Los Angeles. And Dallas is just so huge. Texas is known for football. And the championships and the prestige that Tom Landry had put on this franchise back in the day is just rolling over, and it just continues on with the ownership now. Boston, great basketball fans. The New York Knicks area, Philadelphia, that whole East Coast, where basketball started. So I think that's kind of where you get a lot of guys who fanfare themselves, that they transition their lives other places. Chicago is huge also. A lot of people move from Chicago and to warmer cities and warmer states, and then keep their roots for the Cubs and also the Bulls, as well as all the rest of the Chicago teams. So I think it's just the people who play for them, the aura that they give across, and most importantly, the championships.
You bring up a good point about the Cowboys, because I've been down in Dallas and I know what it's like. They're crazy about football to begin with in the state of Texas, but in Dallas, their Cowboys are everything. Lakers, same thing in Los Angeles. Does it make it hard for an athlete to concentrate and to play basketball under those circumstances?
It's really tough. It does. It's a little bit added pressure, so to speak. Say, for instance, with New York. It's New York City. Everybody was debating on why Amari should or should not go there. And my suggestion is, if he goes there and fails, great. People are going to know about it. If he goes there and succeeds, great. Everybody's going to know about it. Same thing with Jeremy Lin. If he plays the way he does, if he's back in Golden State, he doesn't get as much fanfare. It's just that the high media cities really get that attention and really grab you, and you kind of carry that along with your career. It's kind of hard to always be bad in somebody else's eyes when you have an opportunity to shine on the biggest stages.
You were interesting, because when you were with the Lakers, you led the team in scoring a couple of times, and I also remember that game in which you scored 50 points, and it was the first game in a Lakers uniform that somebody scored 50 points in over 20 years. Did there become an expectation of Cedric Sabalas that he was going to do that every game, he should do that every game?
No, I think it was the expectation more of me getting 20, 25 points a game. And that's what I was getting. When I was in a Laker uniform, that's about what I average, around that range, 20, 25. When scoring 50, and I wasn't a scorer so to speak, as Kobe Bryant. I think the last person was Jerry West and Will Chamberlain, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, those guys. I was a guy who, you know, predicated myself off of other players, Nick Van Exel, you know, Vlade Divac, the rest of the guys, Eddie Jones. They're all great passers, and I just kind of finished them. You know, most of the people on that Laker roster that has 50 points or more are great scorers, meaning that they, you know, they run plays for them. You know, they go, the offense goes through them. This was so unprecedented from a guy who, you know, barely touches the ball during the game. And, you know, first thing first, averaging 20, 25 a game, and then also getting an opportunity to score 50. So I think that was a little bit, you know, shocking to people. But it's easily done. If the ball is moved around the way I play basketball, 50 points was fairly easy if I get enough shots.
You know, you played a position, Cedric, that I have a lot of respect for, that small forward position, because it's kind of an in-between position. You're not a power forward, but you're also not a guard. How difficult was it for you to find your place almost in a sense?
Well, you just have to find your knack. I mean, like you said, that is a tough position because, one, you are mainly the best athlete on the floor all the time. So, you know, you have to transition from baseline to baseline, where point guards go from top of the key to top of the key, and then, you know, centers usually do their work inside of the paint. So you really have a lot of wear and tear that you have to, you know, a lot of ground that you must cover, too, as well. To find your niche, you got to figure out what. Are you going to be a small forward that's a shooter, a driver, a rebounder? And I kind of got my knack by going to the glass, rebounding well. I mean, I was up there with the power forwards and centers when it came to averaging rebounds. And always, you know, when I played, you know, considerable amount of minutes, I was always at the top when it came to rebounding for small forward. As myself and Scottie Pippen, we always at the top every year. But with rebounding. So it's just the point of you just got to find your way. Some are great shooters. Glenn Rice, he's a small forward, and he's just, you know, he spent most of his time on the perimeter making those long-range jumpers, pulling up and short jumpers and stuff like that. And I'm a guy who likes to get in there and scramble and power amongst the trees.
I've always felt that rebounding was more of an attitude along with the talent, of course. Am I correct on that?
You are 1,000% correct. It is a mentality that you have to go out and just try to do. It doesn't fall in your hands. Some people will get lucky with one or two with it just falling in their hands by coincidence. But to go out and do it and average, you know, between 6 and 15, which is, a huge range, once you get over to 6 per game, up in the 8s and the 10s, you have to go mentally and physically put yourself in a position to go get rebounds each game.
You know, when you played some of the teams like the Chicago Bulls and the Boston Celtics, did those teams jack you guys up a little bit more? I mean, what was it about the competition against them, say, compared to if you went up against a team that was not a particularly good team?
Well, Rob, you want to measure your skills against the best. And, you know, Chicago and New York's and Boston, you know, Larry Bird, Magic, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, you want to see how well you play against them. I mean, it's great, you know, playing against other guys, but, it's a lot of focus, a lot of tension on those names. And if you play well against them, you know, people would recognize it. I learned that firsthand when I was at Cal State Fullerton, small school. But, I ended up averaging 40 points, 20 rebounds against UNLV, you know, number one team in the nation at the time. And in one of those years, they won the national championship. So that's where I kind of made my name and got recognized to being, you know, this guy could be a pro player. If he's playing and putting these numbers up against future pro players as Stacey Augmon, Larry Johnson, you know, Greg Anthony, all those guys. So it was just, you know, you want to play against the best and show your all your good stuff off against players who are already proven to be really, really good.
I mentioned, Cedric, that you had played for the Suns, drafted by them, Dallas, also Detroit, Miami as well. Is there a discernible difference in organizations and the way they have a philosophy about playing basketball? Because I know when it comes to baseball, if you grow up in the Dodger organization or the Red Sox organization or the Yankee organization, they teach you to play baseball the way that they do in the organization. Is it the same way in basketball?
It is the same way. There is a much more priority on winning than there is on selling for certain teams. Certain teams want to make some money, and certain teams just want to, just get along in the league. And some teams want to win championships every year. That's where expectations are. And obviously you see where those expectations are by the banners that they hang A lot of teams want to be great and known in the community, you know, and do the right thing that what the community wants and, you know, how the community views them. And some take a chance, you know, hey, I'd rather have championships, and I can explain how Dennis Rodman is crazy, and I can explain how Ron Artest goes wild, and I can explain, you know, those other tangibles of players who, you know, have a, you know, a bit of a wild side to them. I'll try to explain that, but I can explain it with a championship banner and a championship ring better than I can by me just going through the motions, being a team who makes the playoffs and, you know, ends up getting out the first or second round year in and year out.
We're talking basketball with Cedric Ceballos, a very interesting person, very good career, and he is an interesting person off the court as well. We'll talk about that aspect of his life as we continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on Sports Byline.